Welcome to Bio, a podcast produced by the Biographers International Organization. Bio is devoted to promoting the work of biographers and advocating for biography as a genre, with the support of biographers and biography lovers worldwide. I'm Bio member Jenny Skoog in New York City. On each episode, we talk with biographers about their work. In this episode, I spoke with Susan Blumberg Kaysen about her book Bernadine's Shanghai Salon, the story of the doyenne of old China, published by Post Hill Press in November 2023. This interview was recorded at the Bio Conference in New York City on May 17th, 2024. Susan Blumberg Kaysen, welcome to Bio. Who is Bernadine Sold Fritz and what was her era?
Bernadine was someone who was in the middle of all these arts movements, whether it was in Chicago, New York, Paris, or Shanghai. And so I write about her time in Shanghai. But she just happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I don't think there's a lot of people like that in so many different arts communities.
Tell me about the first time you heard about Bernadine and what drew you to write her biography.
It goes back to probably 1995 or 1997. I was in Shanghai and for the third time in 1995. And it was a time when China was suddenly allowed to celebrate anything before 1949. So in Shanghai in 1995, suddenly I saw movies and books and posters celebrating the 1930s. And I had no idea about this time. It was super cosmopolitan. It was super international. And so I started reading about books from that time. And Bernadine's name would come up. But it was only as a footnote or a side note. And the way that these writers wrote about her, it was as if we should know who she was, because she was at the center of it, introducing people. And she had a salon where all these famous people went. And so I started to come across her name more and more, and then I wanted to know about her. This was about 2018 when I started working on it.
When I was reading this book, I sensed that you had found some common ground with her. You're both Jewish. You're both divorced. You're both mothers. Having lived in China as Americans, what was it like to have so many things in common with your subject?
I think that's what drew me to her. Also, we're both from Illinois. And so I think that was very unusual. It just seemed odd that someone from Peoria, Illinois would end up in Shanghai in the 1930s. I don't know why. I'm not from Peoria. I'm from a small town outside of Chicago. But I just felt like her story resonated with me. And I had some really bad moments in my first marriage in Shanghai, where my then husband gave me the silent treatment and refused to talk to me when I asked to go to a bookstore. So I felt like I could understand what she went through on a personal note when she was there, but I do not resonate with her being the center of this community because I am not that.
This book is written in chronological order, beginning with Bernadine's departure from Paris as a thrice divorced woman traveling to China by train to marry for the fourth time. Why did you decide to begin this book in medias res, or in the action, in this way?
I think I tried about five or six different intros, and the one I had started with was she was good friends with Ernest Hemingway. And in Paris, they both lived near each other in Paris, and one day he called her and said she had to rush to this cafe. And he ended up reading her page by page of The Torrents of Spring, which was his first full-length work. So it was his first novel. And it was a mockery of their common friend, Sherwood Anderson. And Bernadine was really upset about this. And this may have caused Gertrude Stein to excommunicate Ernest from her salon. So I started with that, but it was just to introduce who she was. And an editor said that, or maybe it was my agent, said that we needed to get to the action of her going to Shanghai, because that's really the crux of the story, is this woman going somewhere that's totally different from anything she's ever known. And she is young. She's 33, but she's about to marry for the fourth time. So that is more like the gist of the story. So I was sad that I had to take out this Ernest Hemingway part because it was really a good scene. But I just felt like because she's so unknown, we just had to get the reader right into the action right away.
So as a writer, what do you do with information like that? If you've written an essay or maybe is it another book? What do you do with information like that that you leave on the cutting room floor?
Bernadine writes that Hadley Hemingway, Ernest's first wife, ran to Bernadine the moment that Ernest asked for a divorce. And it was 8 o'clock one morning. Hadley's blouse was not buttoned correctly. She was tearing up. And she recounted the story of Ernest asking her for a divorce to Bernadine. So I had these great Paris stories. And I just thought maybe I could publish them as an essay somewhere else. And a literary magazine in Shanghai asked me for a piece that was 4,000 to 5,000 words. And so this worked and it will be published soon. I don't know. I just signed the paperwork. So I'm lucky that I found a place for those because that's more about the people she knew rather than her and what she did. So I am glad that the book does focus on her, but I'm happy that I have this other, you know, venue to publish these other stories.
I want to zoom in on your subject's fourth marriage. She leaves Paris. She gets to Shanghai. She marries Chester Fritz, who's from the United States, and he's super rich. And she's delighted to be there, even though she's anxious on the way and so on. But they get married, and their first night is very strange. And then their marriage ends up being as strange as that first night. Can you tell me about the tone that was set on this first night of their wedding and then sort of about their marriage after that?
In today's, the knowledge we have today, Chester would be classified as a narcissist. And what they do is they totally pour on the love in the beginning. So Bernadine was on this trip around the world with an American heiress friend of hers named Barbara Harrison, and they get to Shanghai in late 1928. They've been on the road for 13 months, and they meet Chester, and he had never met anyone like Bernadine. She knows all these people in Paris. She knew all these people in New York, and they talk, but he stands out to her because he has Chinese friends. None of the other foreigners in Shanghai have Chinese friends. It's a very segregated city. So she likes that. But then she and Barbara leave. They go back through the Soviet Union to Paris. And when she gets home to Paris, there's all these telegrams from Chester. And she barely remembers him, but he's begging her to come back and marry him. He promises her this great life. He doesn't know she has a daughter. And she's at this point where she's 33. She really wants to be married to someone who wants to be married to her. The first two husbands were also narcissists. The third one was nice, but he was a bit older, and she just felt like he kind of trapped her at home, and she wanted to be a writer and get out. Her friends kind of convinced her to go and give this a try, and they were all leaving Paris, so she went back. And so she has this these like ideas that he's going to be this great husband, that he's going to give her the emotional attention she wants. It's not so much the money, but the first night that, you know, on their honeymoon, he says he can't sleep in the same room as her because he's training to for the polo season. He's the captain of the U.S. polo team in Shanghai. And he needs to sleep. And they're not even in Shanghai. They're in northern China. And it's so weird. So she doesn't know what to do. He's never been married before. He's 37. And she wants to give him this kind of like leeway because he's not used to being with someone else. He was quite a romancer, apparently. But he never, like, I guess, slept overnight with anyone. He just would kick him out. I don't know. So he just sounds like a total disaster. But she was presented with this really charming, loving man in the telegrams. And that was not what happened when she met him in person. And then, like most narcissists, he'll give her a little bit of what she expects. So she always hopes she can get back to that. But then he'll pull away again and be horrible to her. And this went on for a really long time. And the movie Gaslight came out after this. But I think that term gaslighting became part of our lexicon after that. But Bernadine didn't know this at the time because it hadn't, that movie hadn't come out. I mean, that was really a pivotal movie, I think, because people could see how this happened a lot in marriages.
So she's living with Chester and he's sort of absent. She starts collecting friends. What does it mean to host a salon in Shanghai in the 1930s?
It was really unusual because, like I said, it was super segregated. Shanghai had these little foreign concessions, which were like colonies. And so the people who lived in those concessions had laws that were different from the Chinese laws. And they just, you know, they acted like they were running the show. And she didn't like that. She wanted to make Chinese friends. And so when she started meeting, it was mostly Chinese writers at the time, she invited them over, and then they would invite their friends over. And then people who weren't Chinese, there were a lot of Russian and French and English and American and German, people from all over, they would come. And it was this really like what we'd call a safe space now, that where you could just talk, and she would have a poet read or a musician play a piece, and then people would discuss that. But she had had a really good role model, although they didn't get along all the time, with Gertrude Stein in Paris, because Bernadine would go to Gertrude Stein's salons. I write a little bit about this, but Bernadine and Zelda Fitzgerald, F. Scott's wife, would be at Gertrude Stein's, and Gertrude Stein wouldn't want to hear from them because, I don't know, she thought they were kind of fluffy. Gertrude thought Bernadine and Zelda were a little fluffy, but they weren't. I mean, they were both really great writers. And Bernadine kind of recreated Gertrude Stein's salon in Shanghai, and it became so popular that 150 people would show up every night, and it was just impossible to have them all fit and talk. So she started a theater company after that.
Yeah, tell me about the International Arts Theater that she created.
So that goes back to her Chicago life, because so all these like pieces from before kind of fit into the Shanghai. And when she was just a teenager in her late teens, she acted in a theater company in Chicago called the Little Theater. And it was the first of its kind. It was the first theater company in America to produce plays by Henrik Ibsen and George Bernard Shaw, which was seen as kind of like revolutionary at that time. And it also treated puppetry as an art. And everyone that acted in the Little Theater had to learn set design and stage lighting and directing. And so it was like a kind of on-the-job training. So she modeled the International Arts Theater after the Little Theater in Chicago, where that was really her first job ever. She did get paid to act. They did plays, like traditional ones by Shakespeare, but then they also did a play that ran 1,000 nights on the West End by a Chinese playwright. It was a Chinese story called Lady Precious Dream. But in England, everyone was white, and so they dressed in yellow face, and it was highly offensive. And Bernadine wanted to do it the right way, which it was a Chinese play, so she cast everyone in the play with a Chinese actor. And some of them were professional and some of them weren't, but it was nothing like Shanghai had ever seen before, and it just was amazing, and people loved it and they wanted more. So she started producing ballets that had Chinese stories. The composer was a Russian Jewish Swiss trained doctor. So that was another storyline I really loved. But all the dancers were Chinese and they were dancing on point. And it was the first time that ballet had been done on a large scale in China. And that was because of Bernadine. So the International Arts Theater, it wasn't just stage productions. They also had lectures. They had classes. She had a lecture or a debate once about birth control in China, but she had people debate it who were on the opposite side. So she had people that were in the birth control league in Shanghai debating the anti-birth control. And then she had conservative people debating for birth control. So it was really interesting, because when you don't believe in something and then you're debating for that, it's quite interesting. So she had people really think. And so she did these things that kind of stirred up society.
How did Bernadine and Anna May Wong meet?
They first met in 1934 in London at a reception, and it didn't really go off well. They didn't connect. Bernadine was kind of a snob, and so she was also on a 9-month trip outside of Shanghai and had a horrible health scare. So she probably wasn't in the right mindset. So in 1936, Anna May makes her first and only trip to China. It's a big production, and when Anna May gets to Shanghai, she meets a lot of people Bernadine knows. So they're at a lunch together one day, and they really hit it off. So Bernadine has all these friends in Beijing, which they called Peiping back then, and Anna May was going up north to Beijing. And so Bernadine gave her what they called like calling cards. So it was like letters of introduction. And so when Anna May went up to Beijing, she met all these people that were friends with Bernadine, and they started writing letters to each other. And I found those letters at Yale in the archives, and they're really beautiful. They're all Anna May to Bernadine. I can see the developing friendship. The first time that Anna May writes to Bernadine, she calls her Mrs. Fritz, like, dear Mrs. Fritz. But after that, it's never Mrs. Fritz. It's always Bernadine. And they talk about, they're both lonely. Anna May never marries. Bernadine's in a really lonely marriage. And they connect. Bernadine goes up to visit Anna May in Beijing because she really needs to get away from Chester. And then Bernadine has a daughter who is kind of abandoned and will later kind of push Anna May into like a mothering role for her daughter Rosemary. She does that a lot with her friends. So it just shows that Anna May was really close to her if Bernadine pushed her to take mothering responsibilities for her daughter, because they were both, Anna May and Rosemary were in New York at the same time. So that's how the friendship started. And they just, I think they loved talking and having someone to listen. Some people have said that Bernadine pushed Anna May to dress in Chinese clothes because she had to like fit that. But I found in the letters that's not true. Anna May went to a tailor. She was introduced to this Chinese tailor by someone else. And then she would write to Bernadine about the beautiful clothes that she had tailored that were Chinese dresses. And then she even asked Bernadine to send up some of these materials, these fabrics to her in Beijing, because she wanted to have more clothes tailored up there. So Anna May just enjoyed, dressing. And it was very, very stylish to dress in these form-fitted Chinese dresses and called qipaos. And their friendship, they respected each other. It was a lovely friendship. And so I wrote about that for Ms. Magazine, because at that time I was worried I wouldn't be able to find a publisher because no one had heard of Bernadine. And the U.S. Quarter had at that, it was 2022 or 2021, had Anna May on the back of the Quarter. So I pitched this to Ms. Magazine saying like, hey, this is in the news because Anna May is going to be on a Quarter. And I have this story about her and Bernadine from 1930 Shanghai. So they published it, and Katie G. Salisbury saw the letter, saw the essay, and contacted me. And I had known her aunt, not in person, but just through social media, because we had both written memoirs set in 1990s Hong Kong and had lived there at the same time. So we connected and reviewed each other's books, her aunt and I, Allison Singh G. And so Katie's her niece, and then she told me that, and then we just started sharing letters about Bernadine or Anna May that we found. I sent her the Yale letters, and she found some other ones that go even into like the Hollywood years, because Bernadine ended up in Hollywood after 1938.
Your research overlapped with Katie G. Salisbury's research on Anna May Wong, and you guys were writing your biographies around the same time. And I understand that you had some images of Anna May Wong that had never been seen before. Tell me about those images, how you came across them, and how you decided what images to include in this book's insert.
I was very fortunate to have met two of Bernadine's cousins. And without them, I could not have written this as it was. I mean, it would have been less personal and more just about the work she did. Bernadine has one, she's a living granddaughter who lives in Washington State. She lives on an ashram, so she's a Buddhist nun. And she had written an article online about Bernadine, and there were all these beautiful photos. And I found that in late 2018, and it was like a treasure trove. And so I wrote to the editor of the online journal, and I said, I'm writing a book about Bernadine, but honestly, I didn't know if I had enough material to do that. And I wanted to know if she had the contact information of the granddaughter. And so she did. And within an hour, I was Skyping, but using the chat, not video, but chat with her granddaughter. She sent me beautiful scans of all those photos that were in that online journal. And then she told me to contact a cousin in Berkeley and a cousin in LA because they have Bernadine's papers and a lot more, you know, many more photos. So I contacted them and they didn't know who I was. And I was worried that they won't want to give these things to me. But I mentioned that I'd written a memoir, and I'm very open in the memoir about my first marriage to a musician from China. So they both read the memoir. Then they got back to me, and they felt like they knew me. So they invited me to their homes, and I did day trips from spring break in Phoenix in 2019. And I went first to LA to visit Bernadine's cousin Nancy Lilienthal, and she gave me a ton of photos and papers, and I took screenshots of them. And then 5 days later, she also went up to Berkeley, and I flew to Berkeley from Phoenix to visit her, Bernadine's cousin, David Zanton. And David's the one that had these Anna May Wong photos that Bernadine had given him, all of these photos and papers. They had only met once, but Nancy knew Bernadine for a longer time and had stayed with her a lot when she was in college. So David had these photos. I had taken screenshots of them, and I showed them to Katie, and she wanted a proper scan. So David didn't remember he had them. So we were trying to get him to say, to find them, and he finally did. And just because there's so much with these, paper, and they were in his garage. So he sent Katie the heart, the real photos. He didn't even scan them. And then she sent them back to him after she scanned them. And they were really small, but they were these candids of anime out in the countryside in northern China meeting with peasants. I just wanted to use photos in my book that showed Bernadine in Shanghai, some of them in Paris too, because she was so striking. The cover photo is her in 1929, right before she goes to Shanghai. So it's taken in France, and it's my favorite.
Wait a second. So Bernadine's papers are in someone's garage. What is the plan? Did you ask those questions? What are they going to do with those papers? Because this person is a treasure.
When I contacted David and Nancy, David was in the process of talking to the East Asian Library at Berkeley about donating them. And that's why there was a rush for me to go see them, because he said he was going to organize them to donate them to Berkeley. So if I could come soon, and I was going to be in Phoenix visiting my mom for spring break with my husband and kids, and it just made sense to do these day trips. So I'm not imposing too much. Then the pandemic happened. So this was March of 2019. I'm so glad I had that chance. David splits his time between South Africa and Berkeley. And so he hasn't gotten around to donating them yet. But the librarian there has come to see them. And it's just a matter of getting things together. Nancy in LA has been thinking about what she wants to do with them too. She knew Bernadine much better. And so the connection is much closer. And both of them had thought about writing books about Bernadine, but at different periods. So David about Bernadine's journalism in Chicago, and Nancy maybe about her time in Hollywood. Because she was in Hollywood in the golden age from 38 to when she died in 82, and knew so many people. She had a salon there. Aldous Huxley would hang out at her house, and Henry Miller, the Tropic of Cancer, he was one of her regulars. And so there's a lot of stories. And Nancy, she is a writer. So I hope that maybe she'll do something with that. But eventually, I think all the papers will be donated.
This book was published in 2023. You have another book coming out this year on Bernie Wong and Chicago's Chinese American Service League. Two books in 2 years. How do you do it?
I was one of those weird people who liked being sheltering in place during the pandemic. I had nowhere to go. I had two kids remote learning and a third who was just out of college, and I had all this time. So I had started Bernadine late 2018. I amassed all this information in 2019. And in 2019, I've been volunteering with this Chinese American Service League teaching English for about 10 years. And so the leadership there asked me if I would write an internal book about their history. And I had just started Bernadine, and I said, well, I could, but, you know, it might take a while. So then the pandemic happened. I had all this time while I was like, I was working with an independent editor with Bernadine. So while he was looking at it, I was doing my Bernie interviews. And, you know, everyone was at home. And so I did a ton of phone interviews, Zoom interviews. I got archives. So I would write that in between. And in 2021 or 2022, I said, why don't we look for a publisher? And so the University of Illinois Press said yes, and I'm going to donate all the proceeds to a senior citizen group there because I work with seniors and I love them. It's so interesting because Bernie Wong, it's a woman. Her name was Bernarda Wong, and her mom was Peruvian Chinese, and so her mom spoke Spanish as her native tongue. And Bernie grew up in Hong Kong, and she and nine other friends from Hong Kong started a social service agency in Chinatown that has transformed Chicago. And when Bernie died, Barack Obama tweeted about her because they had worked together as community organizers in the 80s. And she just was like a force. So this book, it's a biography of her, but also a history of the agency.
Well, Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such an honor.
That was my conversation with Susan Blumberg-Kaysen about her book Bernadine's Shanghai Salon, the story of the doyen of old China. It was published by Post Hill Press in November 2023. This interview was recorded in New York City on May 17, 2024. To learn more about Bio or to hear other episodes in our podcast series, please visit our website, biographersinternational.org. I'm Bio member Jenny Skoog in New York City. Alani Hodge created our theme music. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.